Good morning. This is Sunday, September 14th. It's about 11 o'clock in the morning, and we are continuing our study of certain chapters in certain books. The next book on our list is The Contemplative Life by Joel S. Goldsmith, and we are looking at Chapter 8, Contemplation Develops the Beholder. Now, Joel said many times when this book came out that this book was his Bible, although he knew the principles in this book. Nevertheless, he just loved this book, and he found that it helped him remember, and it helped him stay in tune by practicing the principles in this book. And one of the major principles is developing the consciousness of a beholder. So this chapter is pretty important. Now, I want you to know that I don't close my eyes and point and hope to pick out the right chapter, and I don't sit down and give it a lot of thought. I have a meditation. I look at the next book. I open the book. I read a little, look a little, and I am led to the chapter. And this chapter this week is the one that it's time to hear. So, let's just enter into this chapter. Chapter 8, Contemplation Develops the Beholder. Many times the young student is likely to believe that the spiritual or contemplative way of life is a life without discipline. But the very opposite of this is true, because there is no life that requires greater discipline than does the spiritual life. Now, we said yesterday, and I hope it's understood clearly, that the work is an inner work. It's an internal work. And so the discipline is internal discipline. This reminds me of the statement that is in front of every book of the Infinite Way. Let's read it. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Illumination dissolves all material ties and binds men together with the golden chains of spiritual understanding. It acknowledges only the leadership of the Christ. It has no ritual or rule but the divine, impersonal, universal love. No other worship than the inner flame that is ever lit at the shrine of the Spirit. This union is the free state of spiritual brotherhood. And the only restraint is the discipline of soul. Therefore we know liberty without license. We are a united universe without physical limits, a divine service to God, without ceremony or creed. The illumined walk without fear, by grace. And that comes out of the book, The Infinite Way. But you see here, the only restraint is the discipline of soul. And so, yes, there is discipline, great discipline, a soul discipline that we apply to ourselves. Let's just dive into this, okay? Life, as it is lived by most persons, is more or less undisciplined, because little or no attempt is made by the individual to control the nature of his thinking. He is prone to accept everything that he sees or hears, usually rejoicing over what he thinks is good and moaning over what he believes to be evil. Seldom does anyone ask himself, is this good? Or is this really evil? Rather, our appearance is accepted in accordance with human judgment. Human judgment. You may have better judgment than I because you may have a PhD in human psychology. You may have a doctorate. So your judgment may be greater than mine, more accurate. But it is still judgment, and it's still seeing good or evil, and something that needs to be fixed or improved or changed. Therefore, your greater judgment and my not-so-great judgment, both are the judgment of world mind, a mind seeing this world. In the spiritual way of life, however, that cannot be done. He says, rather, our appearance is accepted in accordance with human judgment, but in the spiritual way of life, that cannot be done, because the entire spiritual life is based on the rejection of appearances. Now, that line there, the entire spiritual life is based on the rejection of appearances, that line got me in trouble. I read it in other books and other places in the Infinite Way literature, and it got me in trouble when I was young because I thought that I had to reject every single appearance, and I spent a great deal of time in mental argument, you know, when you're upstairs in your mind consciously trying to reject this and that and the other. It's really a form of battling the appearance, using affirmations and denials. I got myself tied up in knots a lot of times. That was never what he meant by rejecting appearances. But we'll get into that as we go along. In the spiritual life, we have to go beyond merely rejecting evil as error, because we also have to deny reality to that which appears as good. We have to unsee the humanly good appearances to the same degree that we unsee the humanly evil ones. Spiritually discerned, there is neither good nor evil. And it is on this premise that the entire spiritual universe is built. Yes, there is only God. So, I found out, well, we talked yesterday about going within and ceasing really from any judgment, recognizing both the good and the evil of this world as nothingness, as mental concepts, universal beliefs, and not working on them, not trying to change them or improve them. Finding a way to recognize and realize that this is nothingness, impersonal nothingness. And we talked about when we find that way, we're able to be still. We're able to stand still inside. And we talked about how silence is not being quiet. Silence is exercising no power. But another way of saying that would be silence is exercising no judgment. No human judgment. But standing still and letting the Father reveal itself. And so, when you find that stillness, you really find it. You don't just repeat words and pretend, but you find that stillness where there is no human judgment. Then something else comes forward and begins to reveal itself. And that something is spirit. And it reveals, as we said yesterday, the spiritual universe here, now, in our midst. So that's an awareness. In the silence of human judgment, the awareness of God comes. So you see, it's a little bit more when he says the entire spiritual life is based on the rejection of appearances. This is what he's talking about. Really, probably it should say the entire spiritual life is based on seeing through appearances to the underlying reality. That would be closer to how it feels to me. Then there's not a big battle involved, so you're not rejecting this and that and trying to stop it at the door and all that. Anyway, he says, the discipline on this path lies in rejecting every appearance, whether good or evil, in the realization that whatever it is that is of God is invisible to the human senses. In other words, there is no sitting in judgment on what appears to be evil, but neither is there any acceptance of the appearance of good. There is a recognition that the only real is the invisible, the spiritual, and that is something that cannot be seen with the eyes nor heard with the ears. So you see, you remember in the Kalu study series, he talks about eventually someday we have to do the same thing with the good. Remember? He talked about seeing through the appearance of evil, recognizing it as impersonal nothingness, and standing still and letting God reveal itself. And then he said eventually we have to learn how to do this with the good appearances as well. And still later in another book, he says, it's not easy to stop seeing human beings, but I finally made it. And in another book, he says, I have witnessed the incorporeal nature of true being dozens and dozens of times. We'll get to that chapter, the chapter of incorporeality in Beyond Words and Thoughts. But for now, we know rejecting appearances of good and evil does not mean fighting them and trying to keep them from coming in the door of your mind. That in that way lies a battle. But the battle's not yours, but mine, remember? So if you're battling, you're doing something wrong. No, what it really means is withdrawing judgment. This is good or this is not good. And then when you withdraw judgment, and you really do withdraw it, you're not thinking thoughts about it, you're standing still, into that silence God pours itself. You have an inner experience, as we said yesterday, an inner awareness of the spiritual, universe, self, or body. And that is neither good nor bad, neither good nor evil. It's just spiritual, eternal, immortal. Yes, when you open your eyes, it appears as something good. But that, again, is the mind forming opinions about the invisible and spiritual. So, he says, under the old metaphysics, if we were confronted with an appearance and judged it to be evil, we immediately had to resist it, overcome, destroy, or remove it. And that's what I mean by battling. If, on the other hand, we were confronted with an appearance of human good, we accepted it and rejoiced over it. Ah, but you and I are not in the metaphysics anymore. We are now moving into the mysticism of the message. We are practicing mystical principles. And one of those is that we cease fighting. Okay? Do you remember when you had, perhaps you had a cold and that was considered an evil appearance, an appearance of separation, an appearance of an evil power, and you got still and you practiced principles on it, and in your way you rejected it and resisted it and pushed it away from you and embraced the principle of oneness, and then an hour later your fever was gone or you were back to normal and your body was functioning good again or well again, and you said, Ah, now this is a spiritual experience. This is good. But that was in the old metaphysics. He's trying to lift us up higher into the mystical. I believe that that was Joel's work, too. I really feel that that was his work. Mary Baker Eddy had discovered the metaphysics of Christian Science, and applying those principles, there were millions of healings. They worked. And Joel was in that metaphysical movement. And what happened to him? Do you remember? He was a reader at the Christian Science Church, and he didn't read the Bible much, and he didn't really have much of a spiritual life. He attended church regularly, but he was a salesman and he had products to sell, and he got a really bad cold. You remember the story? He got a really bad cold. And he went to see this practitioner, and it was the practitioner's day off. But when the practitioner opened the door and saw how horrible he looked, how sick he was, he said, "Come on in, we'll have a meditation." And he sat down with this practitioner, and he closed his eyes, Joel did, and had a meditation. And he didn't really feel that much of a fantastic experience during the meditation. But something happened, because when he left, not only was the cold gone, but he found that his desire for cigars and betting on horses and having a drink and playing cards and probably talking about women, all that left. He didn't work on it. He didn't say, "I'm going to be a good boy now, and I'm going to be a good little Christian." He didn't work on that. It left with no effort, no resisting, no fighting, no battling. In the meditation, he was lifted up above human judgment, and in that space of a few minutes of silence, why, all of heaven descended in his consciousness. And the other things went out the door without his effort. And then, if I remember the story correctly, he was still going to work and trying to sell things. And one of the other salesmen came by and said, "Joel, I don't know what your religion is, but I have a really bad headache, and I just have a feeling if you pray for me, it'll go away." And you remember Joel said he didn't know how to pray. So he just closed his eyes and said, "Well, Father, I don't know how to pray, so if there's something to say, why don't you say it?" And then he stood still. And in the stillness, he didn't know it, but we know it now, in the stillness, God came through. The man tugged on his sleeve and said, "That's great. Thanks, Joel. It's gone." And the next day, someone else asked him to pray for something else. And the next day, something else. And within a short time, he was at work. And one of the other employees there said, "Joel, when are you going to wise up? You haven't had any calls for sales today, but you've had 36 calls for healing." And that was when he went across town, he said, and opened up an office as a practitioner. Now, he didn't know what he was doing. He had no idea how to heal. All he knew was that he went to this man with a terrible cold, and he sat in meditation, and the cold left, and these desires for human fulfillment left, and this ability to get still replaced all that. But he didn't know how it was happening. He didn't know the principles. He didn't understand them. And he spent the next umpteen years studying, reading the Bible and reading other spiritual literature by other masters to find the answer. How was he doing this? And eventually he found it. And when he found it, he put it in a book called The Infinite Way. And so here we are studying it. People said, please, Joel, come and tell us about these principles. And so he traveled all over the world trying to lift the world out of metaphysics into mysticism. That was his mission. And he did a pretty good job. And so we're a part of the remnant that is practicing these principles and working and being lifted into the mysticism now. So, under the old metaphysics, we tried to get rid of the evil appearances, but we accepted the good appearances. Right? And that was good at the time. That was as far as we could go. But now we're being invited to come up higher. It says here, we must live as a witness to the activity of God. See how that's different than trying to change an appearance? He says, how can we bear witness to this power except by being still? If we do otherwise, we can no longer say that we are doing nothing or that we of ourselves are nothing. We have become something the moment we do something. I can still hear him in the Kalua Study series saying, we first see the appearance of evil, and then we want to do something about it. He says, therefore, when we are confronted with appearances, whether the appearance is called good or evil, we are being confronted with the human appearance. And if we would bear witness to the presence of God, we must do nothing. We must think nothing. And we must have no judgment. I am sure, he says, that you will not confuse this with an ignoring of our life's work, nor as a lazy do-nothing attitude. But you will understand this to be a disciplined withholding of judging as to good or evil, and an attitude of expectancy, as of listening within. Be sure that you understand the significance of this attitude. That brings to me a remembrance of the art of spiritual healing. You see, the principle is always the same. These principles are the same. But he uses different words in different talks, in different books. So in this chapter, Contemplation Develops the Beholder, he says, when we are confronted with appearances, whether the appearance is called good or evil, we are being confronted with a human appearance. And if we would bear witness to the presence of God, we must do nothing, we must think nothing, we must have no judgment. Now, of course, that is true silence. Silence is not quiet. Silence is an absence of judgment. Now, in the art of meditation, the art of spiritual healing, he says the same thing this way. For years after I had learned to recognize all forms of sin, disease, lack, limitation, depression, were hypnotism, or human picture, the puzzle was to discover how to break that hypnotism. What could I do? It was then that I discovered that scriptural passage, which you will find throughout the writings, the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands. The weapon against error, our offense and defense, is something that is neither physical nor mental. No action, no words, no thoughts, only the awareness of God. See, that's exactly the same as what we just read, which says, we must do nothing, we must think nothing, we must have no judgment. And here he says, no action, no words, no thoughts, only the awareness of God. And he says, on the next page, As you carry this out in practice, watching the stone being formed in and of your consciousness, while you stand to one side as a witness or a beholder, a state of peace will come, and you will catch a glimpse of God as is. See that? Not a power over anything, just God is. And so in this chapter dedicated to contemplation develops the beholder, he's saying the same thing in new words, in different words. And of course he won't confuse this with the do-nothing attitude, because that's not what it is. There's a lot going on within, isn't there? As you come to the realization that this appearance, this human picture, is an impersonal nothingness, and stop wrestling with it, come to a standstill, and as you stand to one side and watch and behold with no judgment, in that stillness, Christ reveals itself. The Father flows. The Tao is present. The words aren't important. It's the inner experience that's important. And as you can see, there's a lot going on within. It's all taking place within. So, no, it's not a do-nothing attitude. And incidentally, as Joel told us in the Kalua study series, sometimes this all happens while he's sitting down having a meal, or taking a walk, or going for a swim, or even driving a car. So yes, at first, you sit down, you have to remember these principles consciously, you have your meditation. If you're lucky, you stumble into this experience, and something happens, like it did with Joel, and you're transformed. And you say, wow, what was that that happened? And you want to experience it again, so you study the principles and you practice them. And eventually, it begins to take over. And you have the experience even when you're not trying to. So, he says here, in order to make ourselves nothing, we must immediately realize within ourselves there is neither good nor evil. There is only God. Then, as we look out at the erroneous appearance without judgment, there truly is neither good nor evil. There is only the presence of God. Now the Father within can perform its function, and its function is to dissolve the appearance and reveal God's glory, reveal its own being. Even though to our sense a healing appears, it is not really a healing, he says. It is the dissolving of the material picture and the bringing to visibility of the spiritual one. So, it all takes place within you, doesn't it? You're not changing anything out here or anyone, because no illusion is ever externalized. So who are you giving the treatment to? Not someone out there. You're giving it to yourself. And you're recognizing this is a human picture. I'm going to withdraw all judgment now. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just nothingness. Just mental concepts. I do not want to look at concepts or improve them or change them. Let me just refrain from entering into them and be still. Now, Father, reveal thyself. And when we have that experience, the concept is dissolved. You're not dissolving something out here. You're making no changes at all. Remember we said yesterday that was what gave Joel the answer to the whole thing, when he realized that Buddha was saying, how do I remove this from out here? And that's the principle. We recognize that this is an erroneous appearance, but it's in the mind, not outside. And so what needs to happen? He told us in the infinite way. we need to correct the concepts. But we don't correct them by adding more concepts. We correct them by seeing through them, by being so still, so obedient to the principle that God reveals itself. And then the concept in the mind is dissolved and it's replaced by an awareness of spirit and the spiritual kingdom, the spiritual universe. And it looks like when you open your eyes that there's been a healing. But there hasn't. There hasn't. There's just been what he terms in the infinite way an improving of concepts. What I term concepts are replaced by awareness. So, he says, there is only one way in which that can be done, and that is to withhold judgment as to good or evil, and then let the Father within do the work. Then, and then only, can we truthfully feel that we have had nothing to do with the demonstration except to bear witness to God in action. Now, remember his story? He had no idea. Well, thanks, Joel, thanks. The headache's gone. Thank you so much. And he just stood there in amazement. What the heck just happened? And then he studied the principles, and he learned what he was doing within when people called for healing. Remember? He's told us dozens and dozens of times, do not take the person or condition into your meditation. Drop them. Drop them from thought. Use whatever term you need to that works for you. Impersonal nothingness, hypnotism, mesmerism, world mind, this world, world thought, concepts, illusion, appearance, any word at all, as long as it means nothingness. And why does it need to be nothingness to you? Because then you can relax, as he says. Listen again. I know you probably hate hearing this over and over, but this is the way I study. When you really begin to comprehend, this is the art of spiritual healing, when you really begin to comprehend that in healing you are not dealing with people, when you learn to eliminate them and their claims from your thought, and in every instance deal with the root of the problem, which is carnal mind, nothingness, or the arm of flesh, nothingness, then you will find how quickly you will be able to become consciously aware of a spiritual presence within you. You see, he says this presence cannot be felt until you are free of the barrier. And the barrier is the belief in two powers. The barrier is the belief in something apart from God. He says, when you do that, when you're able to see it truly as a nothingness, then you can rest in the Word, waiting for the Spirit of the Lord God to be upon you. And when it comes, it breaks the hypnotism. So there you have it. He studied for years and years and years to find out what was taking place in his consciousness within every time he sat down to have a meditation for someone. And then he spoke about it, and they transcribed it, and they put it into books, and here we are studying it so that we can go and do the same. So, he says, then and only then can we truthfully feel that we have had nothing to do with the demonstration except to bear witness to God in action. He says, this reminds me of a woman who was healed of a disease that had been pronounced incurable. And her husband, out of deep gratitude, went to the practitioner and offered him a check as a token of appreciation. When he began to express his gratitude, the practitioner said, "Oh, I didn't do it. God did it." At which the man put the check back in his pocket and replied, "Oh, well, then I don't owe you anything. I'll give the check to God." Says Joel, as a matter of fact, insofar as the healing was concerned, the practitioner was right. Because, of course, he did have nothing to do with it except to find that emptiness without judgment within and bear witness. The practitioner had not brought about the healing. He had merely bore witness to God in action. So, therefore, there was no money due because of the healing. Where the husband was wrong was that he should have known that if the practitioner had not been available and had not been able to bear witness to God's grace, there would have been no healing. If the practitioner had been dependent for his livelihood on hanging telephone wires or tending furnaces, he perhaps might not have been able to live in the Spirit and bear witness to God when he was called upon. So giving him money, therefore, was not for the healing. It was merely to enable him to be free of other obligations so that he could keep his consciousness clear and free of entanglements and could always be in the Spirit to bear witness to its activity. So you see, those of you that have given me donations, hopefully, are not giving me donations so because you expect some sort of healing. Hopefully you understand that the donations are to help me so that I do not have to put my attention somewhere else instead of studying this material, preparing these talks, and maintaining the website. And so I am grateful for your donations. They help me. They free me up from having to work for somebody else so I can do this for all of us. So, he says here, when you witness healing works, always remember what it is you are witnessing. You are not witnessing the power of an individual, for an individual has no such power. You are merely witnessing an individual who is keeping himself free of the appearance world and maintaining himself in a consciousness of no judgment, so that the grace of God can come through. Because the grace of God cannot come through the human mind. And what is the human mind but anybody's mind that is still indoctrinated with the belief in two powers? So, what does all that mean? I agree with this wholeheartedly. Please do not look at an individual and look to them for healing or blessing or grace. Please look to the consciousness that hopefully you are touching in your meditation when you become so still that it flows. Look to that consciousness, look to that spirit behind the individual. That's the same spirit that's behind you. And so ultimately, you'll see that you are looking to your true self, or Spirit, or Christ, or God. And if you look to that, then you can expect it to, yes, be a blessing. What form it'll take, you don't know, but it will be a blessing, because that's its nature. Okay, so now we understand the discipline, don't we? The intense work that takes place within the consciousness of someone that's practicing these principles. He says, regardless of how much knowledge of truth a person may have, no matter how many years he may have studied truth, he may still have no healing power. Why is that? Because he may just be, or she may just be repeating the words and making affirmations and denials, and they may not have found a way to reach that stillness, that silence, that absence of judgment, that absence of power, that absence of personal self. Healing power has to do, he says, with the degree of the actual awareness and conviction attained of the non-power of appearances. So you see, there's two parts. You must come into a conviction of the non-power or the nothingness of the appearance, so that you can set it aside, drop it, or, as I like to say, stop. And in that moment of standing completely still, not moving any personal self at all, no personal judgments. Then comes the second part, the actual awareness of the spiritual kingdom. When you have those two parts, you will have healings. It's automatic. He says, it is for this reason that the spiritual path is a path of discipline. Every student must begin at some moment in his career to withhold judgment. In proportion as this consciousness of no judgment is attained, see, in the beginning it's only attained for perhaps a nanosecond in your meditation, and then later it's attained for a minute or two or three, and finally it's attained when you aren't even trying, when you're walking around with eyes open, sitting down for a meal or having a nice swim. In proportion as this consciousness of no judgment is attained, the appearances in this world automatically change as they touch your consciousness. And that's what happened with the woman who pressed through the throng and touched the hem of his robe, and her issue of blood was healed. Remember? Those are the words they used in those days to try to tell us that this person touched the edge of Christ consciousness. They reached that place of stillness through the throng of appearances. They reached the place of stillness, touched Christ consciousness, and experienced a healing. This is because, he says, your consciousness is now not reacting to good or evil, and is therefore able to pierce the veil of illusion. Think of that. We all talk about the illusion, and we're suffering from the illusion, and the illusion this, and the illusion that. He says right here, as you attain the consciousness of no judgment, you pierce the veil of illusion. Remember, the veil is the concepts in the mind. So you pierce the concepts in the mind, and you behold the spiritual kingdom. As you attain the consciousness of no judgment. Even the veil of good illusion, he says. You're able to pierce the veil of illusion, even the veil of good illusion, and see that there is nothing to fear and nothing to be happy about. Because what you are seeing is not the spiritual creation, but a finite concept of it. Look at this. Think about this. Really think about this. Take this in your meditation. What would this body be if I could see through the concepts about it to the actual spiritual body that the Father gave me? What would this universe be if I could look through the concepts about it to the actual spiritual universe that the Father is expressing? The Master's statement, "My kingdom is not of this world," helps us to discipline ourselves, because instantly we shut out everything that we see or hear, realizing that that is this world, but not my kingdom, the spiritual kingdom. Think of the discipline involved in refraining from all attempts to change the appearance when we are in the midst of what seems to be a problem for ourselves or another. Now, I have to pause here for a moment and say to you, there has been times in my life when I have been so, well, hurting so bad physically that, honestly, I could not contact God. I could not get still inside. All that I wanted was a little bit of codeine to help the pain go away. And eventually the doctor gave me something and the pain went away. And then I could try to sit down and have a meditation. Now, ultimately, the real goal is to be able to meet every single appearance with an empty mind. In other words, meet it with God, so that, like the woman with the issue of blood, it dries up and disappears all by itself. It just vanishes. It dissolves without effort on your part. You're just standing as a beholder, like watching a moon rise over the hill at night. No effort at all. Just watching, just watching, just watching. That's the ultimate goal, but we're not there. Some things we are able to meet that way, and some things we aren't. Don't punish yourself if you aren't. If you aren't able to do that, like for instance, when I had a tooth that was pounding and I had to go to the dentist, you know, I don't punish myself about that. Yes, I know the ultimate goal as well as you do. But if I'm unable to do that, well, I get myself down to the dentist and get it fixed. And then I get back to the principles and continue to practice them. I know the goal. The goal is to have that consciousness so developed of being a beholder without judgment of any kind, so that everything is met. Everything that comes before that consciousness is coming before God consciousness and dissolves. And I understand it. I understand that goal. But let us be honest with ourselves, and if we're not there, get back to practicing the principles. That's what I have to do. So, he says here, see the discipline that is necessary to refrain from attempting to alter, change, or do something about it, and then be convinced and know my kingdom, the place where I live, move, and have my being, is not of this world. Therefore, I have nothing to do about this world except to know that it is not my kingdom. You see, that's all. And then we drop it. And he says, as we withdraw judgment, which means to withdraw our hate, fear, or love of the appearance, it is then that this invisible, the Spirit of God, which is in us, can immediately go to work to reveal itself, which changes the appearance. All right, you see that? Pretty plain, is it? It's everywhere throughout his writings. How he could speak so many years, so many thousands of words, maybe even millions, about the same principle is beyond me. And yet that is perhaps what it took to hear it over and over and over before we begin to say, oh, that's what it means. And then to pick up the principles and practice them and practice them and fail and get back up and practice them and succeed and practice them and fail and practice and succeed and finally come to see, oh, that's how you practice it. And then begin to live it until it takes over. You see, it takes pretty much a lifetime, doesn't it? Now, he says, many of us would be able to attain our release from the world of cause and effect, from the world of appearances, if only we could bring to bear upon the situation the great assurance of the Master, it is I, be not afraid. To know this truth would immediately divest us of any judgment as to the appearance. It is I, be not afraid. I, God, is the only life. I, God, is the life of individual being. And that life cannot be lost, and it cannot be destroyed. Let the storm do what it will, I cannot fear. Now, we understand, those of us that have been studying this year, that this is not something you can just mentally go over in your mind. You can't take this little realization that he had, that was a spontaneous outpouring of spirit, as they say, and make it yours by repeating it over and over with eyes closed. That won't do anything. No, you have to come to the conviction of the nothingness of the appearance so that you can stand still and then hear within your being the Spirit say, the Father say, it's I, It's all I. Be not afraid. Then, with that awareness, then, yes, you have the confidence to face anything. He says, but suppose we came to the realization that our life is indestructible, that neither life nor death can separate us from God. Now, what difference would germs make? And in that realization, the battle against error, the particular form of error, would cease, and none of these things would move us. None of these things move me. My life is in God. My life is in God. My life is with God, and neither life nor death can separate me from God. So, he says, in that realization, death itself has no longer any fears or terrors. No one can possibly fear death once he realizes that neither life nor death can separate him from the life that he is, the life that is his being. Now, when you have this as an awareness, when you have an awareness of the life, capital L, life that is your being, when human judgment ceases for a moment, and you come into the awareness of the I, the life that is your being, then you have no fear of death. Who can die? These concepts, if you're practicing mysticism correctly, they're already dying. They're dying daily. And more you have the awareness of true being, which is eternal and can never die. So you see what happens to the sting of death. It's gone. Now, he says, if we accept the Master's statement, my kingdom is not of this world, we do not have to fight, remove, or overcome anything in the external world. It is I. Be not afraid. I am the life of you. I, God, the Spirit of God in you, is your life, your being, and the substance of your body. Now, when Joel hears this within him, he doesn't then open his eyes and go about his business. No. At the end of this little realization he has in his meditation, he takes the second part of the meditation very seriously. He's quiet. He's still. He's non-judgmental. He's waiting, as if you're waiting for the sunrise. And he does that every time, so that when he feels this inner movement, or he hears the still small voice, then he knows that God is on the field. He knows that this is a spiritual universe, and he rests in it. He says, when we are no longer afraid of anything in the external world, then we automatically arrive at a state of consciousness that no longer concerns itself with the good appearances or fears the evil appearances, but looks out at them with the sense of detachment as an onlooker or a beholder, with no interest in changing, improving, or destroying them, with just the attitude of a beholder. In this attitude of a beholder, our personal mental powers come to a stop. It is as if we were watching a sunrise. He says, nobody in his right mind believes he can hasten a sunrise. Therefore, in watching a sunrise or a sunset, we become completely the beholder, watching. We never enter into the picture, never seek to change, remove, destroy, or improve it in any way. As a beholder, we are always in the absolute center of our being. And as a beholder, we can say, what a beautiful sunset, or what a wonderful spiritual universe. And now he gives you a couple examples, so that hopefully you can develop this consciousness of a beholder. He says, in an art gallery, standing before the works of the great masters, we would be beholders. He says, when we hear a symphony, we do not enter the symphony. We stand off as a beholder and listen. This is the attitude we must develop with every appearance where we see. He says, so it is that God created this universe and all that is therein. To our finite sense, however, we see some of this universe as evil and some of it as good. And strangely enough, the man right beside us may be seeing what we call good as evil, and what we see as evil as good. Yes, so these are concepts, both of them. You see? You may look and say, the entire superpower that's fighting this little enemy is good. And a person standing next to you will say, this superpower is evil. It's trying to take advantage and plunder our natural resources. And so two people are looking at the same appearance. One's declaring it good and one's declaring it evil. Who is right? Answer? No one. That's not there. Those are concepts about the spiritual creation. Now look through it. What if both of them standing there look through it? What do they see? Look through this superpower. Look through this little nation. What do you see? You see that my kingdom is right here. This is a spiritual universe. Everything is in its proper place. Now they're in agreement because there's no judgment. So, developing the consciousness of a beholder means, as we look out at this world of appearances, without judgment, we now behold a spiritual universe. See? Silence means no judgment. By looking at this world without judgment, it is as if we were entering into the consciousness of God. I love that. I just love that. See, over here, when you have no judgment, and you just look, you enter into the consciousness of the artist. And when you have no judgment, and you just listen, you enter into the consciousness of the composer, of the symphony. But when you look out at the world without judgment, then you enter into the consciousness of God. Isn't that just wonderful? He says the only way we can do that is to withhold judgment and be still, seeing neither good nor evil, being a beholder, and letting the Father present the picture to us. We just bear witness, we just behold, not with the idea of healing anyone, not with the idea of improving or enriching anyone, merely with the idea of beholding the picture as God made it and as God sees it. And so, if you haven't looked at a sunrise, or sunset, or a moonrise, or something of that nature lately, why don't you do that? Become very still and just observe. And then apply that in your meditation. That same feeling, that same attitude, that same altitude of prayer, where you just sit, you recognize the nothingness of the appearance, you drop it, and then you just sit and watch, wait upon the Lord, and let the Father reveal the spiritual kingdom. He says the only way that the mind of God can be consciously expressed through us is when we are withholding human judgment. And so we have to have the attitude of a child, don't we? Then, he says, the Spirit of God lives in and through us, changing the picture from what it seems to be and revealing to us that which was always there. And so there you have the secret of spiritual healing. But it's also the secret of spiritual living. It's also the secret of developing the consciousness of a beholder. Finally, he says, we are always judging by the limitation of our finite senses. We are not seeing the world as it is. We are seeing this world as our mind interprets it. And so the whole problem is in the mind interpreting the spiritual kingdom. And that interpretation is made up, well, that's mortal mind or world mind. He says, as we live the life of a beholder, therefore, we find ourselves gradually withdrawing judgment from appearances. We do not react to them, and they do not register in our consciousness. As far as they are concerned, our mind is a blank. We have no desire to change, alter, or improve the appearance presented to us. We are just beholders waiting for God to reveal it to us as it is. So remember him saying the whole secret to the spiritual healing is reaction? Now we know what he was talking about. It doesn't mean you push everything out of your mind and try to sit there blank. No, again, that's resisting and fighting and battling. It means you come to a conviction through your studies, through your prayer, through your experience of meditation. You come to a conviction that the appearance is nothing more than mental concepts right here in this human mind. However, I'm not going to fight them. I'm not going to battle them. I'm going to drop them. I'm just going to stop. I'm going to wait. I'm going to watch. I am going to behold. Father, reveal thyself. Reveal the spiritual kingdom. And I'm still, and I wait, and I watch. He says, I shall be satisfied when I awake with thy likeness. A spiritually awakened person is completely satisfied with the people of this world because he knows them as they really are. Yes, we can see their spiritual identity. And even though he still sees the discords and problems that they are experiencing, he also knows that these are no part of their real being. So, he says, through the contemplative life, or as a beholder, you come to a whole new state of consciousness in which, while you are still aware that there are evils and good in the world, no longer do you sit in judgment on them. When an individual is awakened to the fact that life is indestructible, immortal, and eternal, he cannot fear death. And once he no longer fears death, he cannot know death. No one can experience anything that is not part of his consciousness. And when death is no longer a part of consciousness, he cannot die. And so this is life eternal, that they may know thee, the spiritual universe, and the spiritual self. Okay, there will never come a time when you won't look with your eyes and see what the human eyes reveal, which is sometimes looking at good and sometimes looking at evil. That doesn't matter, because hopefully by practicing these principles and practicing meditation correctly, you are beginning with spiritual discernment to see through those appearances in the mind to the underlying reality or the spiritual universe. And so even though you see them, you will know. What is it that Joel's always saying that sometimes drives you crazy when you think about it? Eventually you reach the place where you can meet these problems with just a smile. How does he do that? How did he meet 300 cases of flu a day? Why, if you had to sit down each time and meditate until you reached that absolute stillness, it would take you the rest of your life. But by doing just exactly that, you reach the place where it gradually becomes your consciousness. Now somebody calls or says something to you, and you're looking through it. This has become your consciousness. You're living Christ consciousness, and you're looking through it. And they say, I have a cold, and you smile, because you are looking with spiritual discernment behind that appearance of a cold at the underlying spiritual universe or spiritual body. and you simply say, "Leave it with me," and you smile. You know it's not real, because you're looking at reality. You see, it's not any longer a mental exercise, is it? It's a living, breathing Christ consciousness. And when you know you're that, and that that cannot ever die, it can never pass away, it's eternal, for you, for all intents and purposes, death has been overcome. Says Joel, "I will be here 1,000 years from now, even though the form may be different. That is because I is spiritual, I is one with God, I is of the nature of God, therefore I is without finite form. Yet I can manifest as in or through finite form." When you have realized that, the sting of death leaves you, because you will know then that you are I. And I will always be your state of consciousness, except that you will progressively elevate until there is nothing finite left. That I is the secret of the transcendental life. Now, he says, "In the face of danger, we withdraw judgment. Whatever is real is of God and is permanent and eternal. I do not have to lift my finger to save it. I merely have to behold God in action. We must sit not in judgment, but completely without judgment, in the realization that this is God's universe. It is I. Be not afraid." Now, of course, your realization will be different. It won't be the same exact words that he's using, or the same exact experience, and yet it will be the Father revealing the spiritual kingdom. It will be the Christ of you revealing itself. He says, "In the face of danger of any nature, we stand by without judgment and bear witness to God. Then afterward, when the harmony has been restored and safety and security realized, we can repeat with the Master, 'I of my own self did nothing. The Father within me did the work.' Of course, there was one thing we did, and that was very important and very difficult, and that was to come to the place of being a beholder. The spiritual discipline on this path consists of the ability to discipline oneself so as not to see a picture that has to be changed, improved, or removed. It is I. Be not afraid. And then stand still and bear witness while God brings about the transformation of the visible scene. It is I. Be not afraid. My kingdom is not of this world. Cease ye from man whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he to be accounted of? These are the three scriptural passages that have been the foundation of my healing work ever since the early 1930s. Now, bear in mind that he's saying this in this book, in this talk, somewhere around 1961 or 62 or 63. So that's 33 years at least that he's been working with those three principles in order to develop the consciousness of a beholder. He says, "As human beings, there is not one of us without sin. But by coming into the awareness of our true identity, and then learning to be still, and knowing that I am God, and that because I is God, that I governs its own universe, it maintains it and it sustains it. In the awareness of that I, we become beholders of the Christ in action. And as beholders of the Christ in action, we are able to pierce the veil of illusion. And then we begin to see reality." And so that is the chapter, Contemplation Develops the Beholder. But we might have entitled it, Develop the Consciousness of the Beholder. And again, it is the same experience, capital E experience within. On the one hand, these principles are helping us to come to the place where we have that experience where God does take over our meditation. But then in the long view, we are practicing these principles so that we reach the place where God takes over and lives our life, lives its life where we stand. We come to the place where Christ consciousness stands here. And then error, whether appearing as evil or good, which touches that consciousness, melts. And in its place, God reveals the finished spiritual kingdom. And it is my hope that all of you listening and practicing will come to that state of Christ consciousness. Thank you and blessings.